Did coming out of law school, did each of you know that this is where you wanted to focus your career on, or how did it turn into, self-defense, shooting or that aspect of the
law?
Yeah,
I'll go first. So, you know, when I was in law school, I knew I wanted to be a criminal defense attorney. I did not think, I wasn't specifically thinking about self-defense and more specifically firearm-related cases. That was an interest of mine, but I can say that, that's exactly what I wanted to do. It just so happened, the way my career went, that I met Dave and I met Irina, who's an attorney at our firm, and, I grew to love this stuff. And I'm incredibly passionate about it. And so, during the course of representing all these people, seeing how this situation has affected them, how beating the case, how that changed their lives, it's become a very important thing for me.
Yeah, both of you definitely seem passionate about it. It's not just, a title on a door or a sign. It's obvious that it's very meaningful to each of you.
If something happened to me, I would want these two guys. I just get a certain vibe. But
no, I greatly appreciate that. I didn't have guys in high school. I would have been voted most likely to need an attorney, not to be one. So I open with that when people ask me questions about why I'm here and what I do.
Maybe that's why.
I've been attacked before, which had nothing to do with me being an attorney. I've been shot at. I've been beaten, close to beaten to death by a group of gangbangers. And these are separate situations.
No kidding.
So I've had a lot of exposure to this quote-unquote real world. I have a very different background, and I'm not going to expand any more on that than what I just said. But I didn't. This is more something that I was told I had to do as be an attorney. I'm not going to go into significance of why I was told that or who was telling me, but this is something I was told I had to do. I got my wife and I got pregnant and married in high school, and it was as much as I was going down a different road, doing different things. I wouldn't say a different road, but I definitely was, going down the road. I was whatever road it was, a very very quick direction. I stopped, and I had focused there, getting married, and knowing I was going to become a father. I had focused that I didn't have before, and I don't want to bore you with it, but that's
it's not boring at all.
That's what got me into law, and I've been doing criminal defense and injury cases. And again, we make so much more money on injury cases. Our firm does. And I mean, so much more money, and it's so much easier. I mean, I can argue for millions of dollars. If I'm arguing for people's freedom and people's lives, that's monopoly time. I mean, put me against any personal injury attorney. Put us up against any personal injury. We're arguing the most difficult stakes that you can is people's freedom. That is the most
right.
You can't undo whatever happened to somebody, the injury. They've already been injured.
Yes.
This injury is coming, is crashing down. The walls are closing in on our clients. We have to prevent injury. It's a very different.
I could see where that might be, where that would be very motivating.
Very valuable for purposes of litigating something like injury cases, because I mean it's like kid's play to us. I mean, you want to argue for money? Oh yeah, come on. This is what we argue for a living. We're litigating all the time. But the reason I'm personally most attached to this is exactly for the reasons Paul said. It affects so many people's lives so quickly, and it's a tragedy. It's a very significant tragedy, and it's not really being focused on, because we don't have a ref that just comes in that saw the whole damn thing. It's at the corner and sees these people in the ring and sees that this person attacked this person defended himself. We have all these Monday morning quarterbacks, that are whether they're jurors or judges that are listening to, these trials. For example, we finished a murder, a 10 murder trial, just a little bit ago, and it took 2 weeks for this trial to go forward. The case in Cali was 2 weeks that just finished in the end of December, and I've had multiple trials between and around these trials, but I mean some of them are 2-3 weeks long, and the reason I say that, guys, is because the situation that people are being confronted with, that people find themselves in when they're defending themselves, it can be minutes, it can be seconds, it can be fractions of a second. And then the judge or the jury is being presented with the situation over the course of, let's just say, 2 weeks. And when you talk about Monday morning quarterback, we're comfortable in our chairs right now, right? I mean, these are very nice chairs. I made sure they were very nice chairs in this office. But we're comfortable in these chairs right here, okay? We're sitting here and we're talking about theory, and we're talking about practice. We're talking about a number of different things and that affect the 2A community, but we're talking about it comfortably, right? When you're in a courtroom, you're comfortable. Not in the same sense. Not necessarily. I mean, you're at the courthouse. You don't want to be there. Your children are at home, or your employer's ticked off that you're gone, whatever the situation might be. But you're comfortable in the sense that you're not being attacked. What you're hearing about, you're not experiencing.
Yeah.
So it's our job to make it so that you really feel like you're experiencing it, to build it up, to go ahead and make the ride as accurate as it was for our client. But the reason I'm saying this is because you're not in this situation. Prosecutors pointing fingers about, you know, you could have done this, you could have done this, you could have done this. And what often comes out of prosecutor's mouth is, he could have ran out, he could have left. He could have just taken off, he had an opportunity to leave. Mm-hmm. There's no duty to retreat. He could have left, he could have ran away. And it's that Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, that's so disruptive here, because these people were not in the situation. They don't know what the situation is. So I'm familiar with these situations. I was, you know, when I was almost beaten to death, I mean, my head was getting hit like a pinata with a baseball bat and a lead pipe repeatedly, and there are 8 different people. People might say, hey, look, you know, somebody sitting in that Monday morning section might say, hey, well, that person didn't have when these people came up, I knew immediately something was going to happen. My gut, everything I know about life, everything that my life's experiences at that moment, I know this is getting ready to happen. Mm-hmm. There's another guy with me. One of these guys takes his hat off his head. Let me see your hat. And he takes his hat off his head. I know what's getting ready to happen. I know the next thing. I'm getting hit. And then I'm down. And there's concrete right below me. And I'm trying to shield myself as best as possible while it's happening over and over again. Somebody could have said, if I was armed with a firearm right there, I could have prevented this whole situation. But then somebody would have said, hey, you never saw a gun. You never saw a pipe. I didn't see these guys with a pipe, and I didn't see a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right.
Somebody would have said, you know, did you ever see it? No. Well, I was in fear of, I believe this is what's going to happen. Why did you believe it? Well, because of life's experiences. We'll expand on that. Well, that's not really enough. How do you know these people? You know, and that's what happened. So these situations, guys, it's when you have 2 weeks and the prosecutor's given 2 weeks of all these different reasons why you didn't have to do this. You don't have 2 weeks to make a decision. You don't rewind back and throw the defendant in a situation and say, all right, here, Freddie, here's 2 weeks of information. Now you know that this person does or doesn't have a background. You know, this person did or didn't do this. You know, this person may or may not have done this earlier in the night. This might have been happening. That might have been happening. You don't have all this stuff. You only have the information that's approaching you rapidly, that's got you in a situation where you believe this is fight or flight, right? You have to make a determination what the heck you're going to do.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective.
I mean, again, I can't answer a question quick. I can't give you a quick answer. There's a lot to it from me as far as why I do this, you know, why it's so damn important. And Paul, you know, really hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, it's just watching these people get their lives back, you know, because there's so much more attached to these cases. You know, people, you as an employer, you're not responsible for the intentional acts of your employees as a general rule in the law. Like civilly, you can't be sued, or criminally, you can't be tried the intentional acts of your employees as a general rule. However, when you're put on notice of you know, propensity for violence, for example, quote unquote, a propensity for violence, for example, you have an employee that's being charged with attempt murder or murder, and you allow that person to keep working there. Now, if that person kills or injures somebody, now you can be responsible. So, an employer's or employer's attorneys are saying, "Look, I know you really like Joe, but Joe now is a liability.
Too much baggage.
Joe shot somebody, and now if Joe does, God forbid, Joe does something. Well, I don't think Joe would do that. Well, I'm just telling you, if Joe does that, you lose your business. You lose your shirt off your back because they're going to sue the hell out of you, and they're going to say that you knew that Joe was being charged with murder, and you allowed Joe to work." Continue working at your factory or at your place of business, wherever the heck it might be. So there's a lot of different ways that people are affected by this stuff, not just at the time that it's happening, but you know, the rippling effect that follows.
That's really interesting. I do have a question that one of our listeners wanted me to ask. And we actually touched on a little bit before we started recording, but if somebody is they have a felony on their record, is there a route for them to be able to get a FOID and then subsequently a concealed carry license?
Yes. So it would depend on the nature of the offense, if they had any, what the criminal background is, if any. There's you know, there's an Illinois statute about this. You would need to first exhaust, my understanding is, and you would first need to try appealing it through ISP, and then if that fails, you would then want to file a petition in the court at which this case was determined or decided that formed the basis for you to become a felon.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, this isn't something that's done very often. It's not, you know, we're more involved on the trial level.
Yes.
So it's not anything that I do on a day-to-day basis. But I recall a few years ago when I was employed at a different firm that someone contacted me about, and it didn't necessarily relate to guns, but someone had a drug conviction, and they wanted the ability to have a FOID card again. And you know, when I called the clerk, they didn't even know what they should file it under because of how uncommon this type of appeals process is.
Gotcha.
And so ultimately, we did. You know, the clerk was able to figure out how to properly, you know, take the documentation. And it's a process in which, you know, that there would need to be a hearing in front of a judge to determine whether or not they should restore your rights.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't have much experience doing this. It is something that I've done before, at least initiated the process on. And, you know, I would imagine that if it's a firearm-related offense, you know, good luck getting your privileges back. But, you know, for a drug conviction, if you're otherwise have a clean background, you know, it might be something that's possible. I suppose theoretically, you know, even a firearm offense, theoretically, you might be able to regain your privileges. I just don't know what the likelihood of that would be.
Here's one thing, for example, Aguilar.
Correct.
Look at Aguilar. Because the Aguilar case, a lot of the former UUW charges, we have the ability now to vacate. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with Aguilar, what Aguilar is.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Okay, well, look up Aguilar because we'd be here for
a long
time.
Yeah, no. I
basically,
greatly appreciate it.
It was basically it's the constitutionality of the UUWs. No, I'm not saying for that. I'd stay as late as you want to go. I'm just telling you that it would take quite a bit to focus on Aguilar. But the Aguilar decision,
I can summarize this. So it was a decision rendered. I went to the Illinois Supreme Court, and basically, it's not applicable to every form of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. You know, it typically needs to be the more vanilla one that doesn't mention, where there's not a specific enhancement for having no FOID card at the time. And so the legislation has not been changed as far as the statute for aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. So Aguilar only applies to cases that are on the older side. And so if, in fact, you pled guilty or were otherwise convicted of an offense at which the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon statute was unconstitutional at that time because they weren't granting concealed carry permits or concealed carry licenses, you may be eligible, depending on what count you pled guilty to and how it was phrased.
I gotcha.
To reinstate, you know, to vacate that conviction. And that might, you know, if that's the only felony conviction you have on your background, you might now have the ability to obtain a FOID card and subsequently a concealed carry license.
Is that basically because in a situation current day, having a concealed carry license, it wouldn't have been an issue? Is that basically...
Right. So Illinois wasn't granting concealed carry license at that point. It didn't exist. So basically the law was construed in a way where you weren't allowed to basically have a loaded firearm outside of your home.
Right.
And so now that's changed with the concealed carry license, but you've got all these people that were convicted or otherwise pled guilty to charges involving having a firearm outside their home.
But just think about the significance of that, fellas. We have since held that statute to be unconstitutional. A lot of people were found guilty or pled guilty to that, have felony convictions, could not, and this is something, this is an inherent right, not privilege time, we're talking about right. People, this is a violation of people's constitutional rights, and they later, the courts later held that it was unconstitutional and thus a violation of people's rights. However, for that time that all these people, thousands and thousands of charges that came down against different people, took these convictions, some of these people couldn't afford to feed their families because they couldn't get jobs.
Right.
And resorted now to more of a criminal life to be able to go ahead and get money to be able to go ahead and provide for their families.
Just to survive.
Because they have to survive. And it's because of an unconstitutional statute. And we've now found it unconstitutional. You cannot restore all that time, that lost time, that people were out of professions, were out of jobs.
Right.
People's families were starving, and these are people that wanted to work. Talking about people that want to work, not the people that are at home just collecting unemployment checks or that refuse to go back to work after COVID or whatever the situation might be. I'm talking about people that actually had these jobs. You also talk about the significance of this and how it affected people that were from out of state. And you want to talk about 2A. You talk about like Indiana, for example, a neighboring state, which is you know 5 minutes from where this office
right.
is. You know, if you just go down Halsted over there, you can get to Indiana in no time. You talk about the fact that people over there, you know, what's necessary. Now they're constitutional carry. They weren't constitutional carry at the time that statute was in. But how they can carry over in Indiana versus how they can carry over here. There's something in the law. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. I'm sure you may have heard of that. It's an old maxim. It's a big truth. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. But now you have to worry about ignorance of geographical boundaries.
Right.
Because now you don't even know. You cross into Indiana where it's perfectly legal. You're now in Illinois, and now you're being charged for a felony for something that's perfectly legal in Indiana. Think about the significance, guys, of not having a universal truth as it pertains to firearms in this country outside of the Constitution. Think about the significance of how so many different people have bastardized, have taken this amendment. What does the Second Amendment mean to you? Have taken this amendment and carved out, you know, what they believe to be the law from something that worked. I mean, if you rewind the clocks back 250 years or so, when they put these, when they initially wrote this stuff up, and you look at what was happening then, when anybody could be carrying a firearm. Were you running over to your neighbor and robbing their house when anybody could carry a firearm? When nobody had to, there was no such thing as a permit. You just might just meet a firearm. You might just
right.
meet death for doing something stupid. There was accountability. We don't have accountability anymore. As a matter of fact, we're removing accountability more and more and more from the equation in life on a daily basis. You talk about all the different problems that are out here. I mean, why don't we just start with talking about just the fact that the focus isn't even on raising children anymore in this country. I mean, where do you go with this? If it's just it's not. If people don't have respect in their house, how are they going to have respect outside of their home? I mean, I wasn't scared of the police. I was scared. God forbid I did something. I was scared what was going to happen at home.
Without a doubt.
I wasn't scared of anything. So, I mean, it's just a big change that's happened. But you talked 250 years ago when we had far more of these values and ethics and morals in place than we do right now. And you talked at that time where people had firearms. There weren't mass shootings. It wasn't something going because you know if you did something stupid, again there's something called accountability.
Right.
Somebody might actually you expect that people around you have firearms, and you might actually go ahead and get shot for it. It just there's no answering, and we've become so soft that instead of recognizing this, we're these rights, we're constantly chipping away at these rights, and at the same time we're constantly, again as I said earlier, we're constantly empowering criminals. We're giving them more and more ammunition, so to speak, you know, well, with which to work.
And we're also empowering some of the wrong politicians.
Very much.
We speak all the time that the importance of registering to vote and voting in the correct people, because a lot of these politicians, they don't make it a secret at all about wanting to do away with the Second Amendment.
And I'm so glad that you raised that, because what people don't do, everybody's passionate about Biden versus Trump, Obama, Clinton,
right.
Bush, whoever the heck it is. Everybody's in recent years, everybody's got a real hard stance. And not everybody, but I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Generally,
sure. No, I think that's a pretty safe statement.
Just about everybody has a very strong... Families are divided. Friends are divided off of what's happening, right? So invested in what's happening with the president of the country. And yet, whatever the president does, generally speaking, it takes a while for that to trickle down to us. A lot of stuff that one president is taking credit for is because it was something that another president did years before,
sure.
and so on and so forth. It's a problem, you know, it's a problem that we have such a focus on things like on that particular station, that particular, you know, title, that particular office. And yet, as you just said, Joe, you talk about these different politicians. Let's remove politicians, the word politicians. Let's just talk about judges. People go out and vote for judges based on race, based on sex. Is this a man or a woman? Based on
name recognition?
Based on exactly. Is this an Irish guy? Is this a
right?
You know, I think you give people more credit. It's just swag. You go in there and
don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And some of the people in the party, they just go down the line. So you got a lot of, you know,
and that's what parties before. Were supposed to be for, was to help with
once,
that.
Once upon a time, but you got a lot of division. You have a lot of division between these parties. But now within your party, especially if you're 2A, if you're voting one way, for example, before, it's become a platform issue. Now you have to be concerned with exactly what the heck's happening with issues like firearms, for example, and it's further dividing everybody.
I just want to elaborate further on what Dave is saying about how judges are elected, at least here. So now once you've been elected as a judge, now they're voting whether or not you should be retained. And so it's completely different about how it works. Unless they vote you not to be retained, you stay a judge. At least the elected judges do. And so unless they vote not to retain you, which most people don't know about, although it's on the ballot, you know, that's the only way that another election occurs over your spot. You know, that or you otherwise vacate your position.
Yeah.
And so you've got a lot of judges that have anti-firearm views that people are, you know, lack of knowledge, they stay there because they're not voting not to retain them.
Yeah. Every election I try and vote in, all, especially local. Your vote matters on a larger scale on all of your local elections. I put together a really interesting worksheet for every one of them.
I like that.
And
that's great.
Well, you should share it. You should post.
Yeah,
it. You should.
I was thinking the same thing.
You should for sure post.
Maybe I'll do that on the website.
Yeah,
I think it's an awesome idea. I think everybody should. I think that's an awesome idea. It's probably. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, but I think I'm.
No, it's just pumped. You know, I hand it out to some of the people I know that. I have people that'll ask me, hey, what do you think of this? And it's, you know, here's my sheets, and here's pros, and here's cons, and here's the categories that are important to me. And, you know, for one of them, it was 5 pages.
It's that funny thing about responsibilities. Like, once you take them on, you find out there's quite a bit of work behind a lot of them.
Yeah, it really is, but monumentally important also.
Yeah,
extremely important. I'd love for that to be published for everyone's information.
Yep. I could do that.
I'd be more interested to see it myself. Yeah, I mean, guys, it's you go down the rabbit hole here, because it doesn't stop. there's especially getting back to the self-defense stuff, it doesn't stop. And the differences between states and understanding the differences between states, because you might be, you know, you guys are focused on Illinois, and a lot of what I do is focus on Illinois, and then I go in these different states, and there's completely different rules, and it changes up. But when you're focused on Illinois, part of being focused on Illinois is understanding a lot of people travel, guys. A lot of people leave Illinois that live in Illinois. If they're fortunate enough to be able to have that type of freedom, have that type of ability to travel, you know, to take off work or whatever, but they leave Illinois, maybe to see family, maybe to do this, maybe to do that, and it's so important to understand that when you're leaving Illinois and you're entering these other states, that they likewise they also have their own rules. And
absolutely,
it's so important to understand how those rules change up, because you traveling with your firearms through these different states is different. The simple question of whether you're supposed to answer the police or tell the police. You know, some states say that you have to immediately tell the police when they come up to the door whether you have a firearm, and you don't know that. You're in that state, and, you know, God forbid there a conversation that comes up, you could be charged for that. The minute you get charged gives them, you know, if in fact they charge you for anything, gives them the right to, arguably, to search your vehicle, for an inventory search for your vehicle before it gets towed, or search incident to arrest, depending on what they're charging you with, whatever the situation might be. But you're just opening up another, you know, can of worms. So it's when you do these things, guys, and I appreciate, just like you guys said, you appreciate us being here. I appreciate you guys being here, and I appreciate you guys, what you guys are doing and what you're offering to the 2A community, to the community at large that it's interested in this one way or another, because it's just awesome to have conversation about it without concern, you know, without concern about, you know, people getting their feelings hurt, or people, you know, feeling. I think the more you educate people on these issues, the more people can understand a different perspective, the more it helps, whether they agree with it, guys. It's not, at the end of the day, it's not about, you know, finding, you know, necessarily finding all like-minded individuals. As
absolutely.
You said before, Joe, before this began, you know, you guys are trying to get a more comprehensive, you know, do a more comprehensive approach to these topics, which is, you know, one of the reasons I was very interested in you know, doing this podcast with you guys, just in you elaborating on that. I think you just kind of get the conversation started. You
know? Yeah.
Because there are walls up. So the walls prevent conversation. And the more you get the conversation started and you get people thinking about this, then we can entertain change, and we can entertain how that change would take place, and with whom that change needs to be, you know, needs to be.
We just had that conversation, though, on the way out
on
here.
On the way
here. We don't want this to be an echo chamber for 2A people.
Right.
I know that it isn't on a smaller scale. I have several people that I know that aren't into firearms, but are listening and asking questions. But even different point of views, we really want to get them in here. We really want people to feel safe to have these discussions and grow this conversation.
One question that I had, you mentioned, Dave, if you're driving in Illinois and police officer asks you if you have a firearm, mm-hmm. and the law says you're supposed to, you know, confirm answer, that you do.
Answer honestly, yeah.
Yeah, answer honestly, yes. Are they allowed to ask to see your firearm?
If you say you have a firearm, then yes. They could say, let me see a firearm. So, again, this goes back to that very dangerous word that Lee threw in a conversation early on, which is that word practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the theory versus what's actually occurring. So the minute you say you have a firearm, laws, there are blurred lines here. So when you talk about, is this allowed to happen? Is this allowed to happen? The bigger question is, does this happen and does that happen? Because rarely is anybody being punished for overstepping, overreaching with respect to what they can and cannot do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What you really have to understand more is the practical side of this, the real world side, so to speak. You know, what actually happens in the quote unquote real world when you say this, and it's like, well, Chicago, for example, just because it's the city around us, you know, so you can't. It's Chicago itself. It's almost as though they get rewarded for the more handguns they collect. The not even handguns, the more firearms they collect. Mm-hmm. Not even handguns.
There are certain things that make sergeants happy.
Yeah.
And that might be one of the things that makes their sergeant happy.
Yes. Yeah, that's not, that might be. That very much is something that's making somebody happy because they're constantly being confiscated. I had a very interesting case I got involved in that's not so interesting, comparatively speaking, like from the self-defense side. We had a guy that follows follows me on TikTok, and he was in Chicago, and he was turning around by the Field Museum. It's late at night. He went down the wrong road, and he's turning around because he just realized he can't go that way. And he turns around. There's nobody around. Well, at least he thinks. Just does this real quick bit going the wrong way on a one way to get himself back to where he needs to be, and police officer sees from a distance and goes over wherever he's at and pulls him over and asks if he has any firearms, and he says he does, and then the police officer proceeds to ask him where are they at, where are they located in the vehicle, and can you step out, and ends up searching the vehicle. So he has a firearm on him. He has a firearm in his center console. He has a firearm in his glove box. And he has a shotgun and another firearm in his trunk, I believe. But anyway, gets him out. Now, and the firearm on his person is, there's one in the chamber. He goes ahead and he writes him up for a UUW. Unlawful use of weapon. By the way, UUW, if you're not familiar with this charge, UUW is not about using the weapon. It's about possessing the weapon. So it's very, it's, I don't know why it's called unlawful use of a weapon, but that's the statute. And there are various different types of UUWs, unlawful use of weapon statutes in Illinois. But he's getting charged with this, and because he's being charged with this, his vehicle is being impounded. And when you are in Chicago and you're being charged with this type of offense, it's an automatic, on top of the tow fee, it's an automatic $2,000 fine. $2,000 fine. And he is, hold on one second. That is, for anybody wondering why there's a brief pause, that's my daughter calling me, and I always answer, I can't say always now, but...
Can appreciate that.
Mostly always.
Yeah, can appreciate it.
So the rest of these buzzings I disregard, but I had to text her and just tell her.
It's the right thing to do.
But he's being charged this $2,000. He's now got this $2,000 fine on top of everything else. So he's getting charged with the UUW. And he's being charged financially with the tow plus the $2,000 on top of it that Chicago imposes. And it's a Chicago thing. It's not a state thing. It's a Chicago municipal ordinance. Paul goes to court on the criminal case. We got a bunch of stuff going. And by the way, they put the criminal case and if you want to contest the civil charge, they put that on the same day as this criminal case.
Oh, perfect.
Two different courthouses.
That was real nice of them.
So I'm representing somebody at another courthouse in Chicago. Paul's representing him. We've got attorneys in different courthouses, but between myself and Paul, because this is something that he and I were, we had to tag team here. I'm representing somebody over at this courthouse. He's representing this guy at the criminal proceeding. I say, you know what? I should be able to knock out my hearing in time to be able to get over for this forfeiture proceeding, the $2,000 in the vehicle. And I said, I'll get over there. Now, this guy just paid us. I just charged him. I charged him just for the criminal portion of it. I didn't charge him for civil because I said I don't do those hearings. But, you know, he's getting screwed over by these people, and I hate the fact Chicago keeps doing this. And so I go over there to argue this in front of this hearing, this administrative hearing officer, and this Chicago prosecutor, and these cops. And these cops are laughing at my guy, like, you know, why are you even here? Like, you don't win these things. You should have just gone ahead. We told you this when we arrested you. You're getting charged with this. You're making an issue out of something you can't do anything about. Me. I love the challenge, guy. I mean, if you haven't figured it out, I mean, just put me in the ring with anybody that's talking shit at this point in my land. This isn't even something I even do. I mean, this is something I frown upon because it's not something I'm like, you guys, you're wasting your time to have me there because, you know, I'm fighting for $2,000 plus, and it costs more right. per hour. I did this pro bono, and I hate saying that right here because I'm too damn busy to do anything pro bono. People are like, can you please do some pro bono? I did this quasi pro bono because he'd already paid for the criminal stuff. I did like half pro bono in a sense. I went to this freaking hearing for this guy, and I argued this out, and I outlined how much ignorance there is in Chicago for the laws concerning firearms, and how this prosecutor had no idea what the hell he's talking about. I even put on the record that he was, that when I started arguing things, and I started arguing case law, and I started arguing statutes off the top of my head, I even put it on the record that he was searching frantically through his cell phone, trying to look up the different stuff that I'm saying. I put that, I told the judge that your prosecutor here is trying to search up, I'll tell you exactly where you can find it. And he goes, I take offense to that. I said, you can take offense to as much as you want. I'm sitting here staring at you on your phone right here with your phone under the table where you're looking up the stuff that I'm saying. I said, you can take offense to it. You know, I should be charging you for educating you right now. I went through this whole thing with the administrative judge, and he's like, counsel, what's your response to what he's saying? And I said, judge, if you'd like, I said, I'll show you my phone right now. I'll pull up ISP's website where it specifically says that you're permitted to travel through the state, even though the city of Chicago doesn't recognize, or the state of Illinois doesn't recognize out-of-state credentials. It does specifically say for purposes of transport. Your firearms that you can't affect transport through. So I said, look, this ISP website. This is the main body, policing body for the state as it pertains to firearms. This is their website where it specifically says this. And the guy's like, counsel, what do you have to say? And he's like, I wasn't looking this up. I was texting to somebody upstairs. The hell you were texting to somebody upstairs? And I'm going to put you on blast right now if you're listening to this, and you shouldn't be listening to this because you're so anti-2A and anti-law and so very ignorant. But if you are listening to this, you know exactly what the hell you're looking up. I was speaking law faster than you could research it, and basically got this thing thrown out, and it just felt so damn good. Just going ahead and stepping up for the little guy against the big city that just pretty cool. You know, that just goes ahead and does this. But it happens all the time, so be aware of that also if you start answering questions.
I like it that you get a little glimmer in your eye when you absolutely. Talk about that. That's pretty cool.
Nice victory.
The David and Goliath stuff is really
yeah. That's all right.
Well, the bigger victory was the criminal case. But yeah. Obviously yeah. That was very important, yeah. too.
All right, Paul.
Won that one, too, huh?
Yeah. But anyway, guys, I mean, like I said, and you know, we could maybe even take this up on a different day. I didn't mean to hold you captive here all night, but this is what we do, guys. This is, and you could... You can tell this office right here, nobody else gets to see it, but you can tell this office is not in any way remotely resemble an attorney's office. I mean, it's a pretty sexy office.
No, it's
I like it a lot. I like
something to behold.
I keep looking at the vault door over there. I like that.
My main office.
But I didn't do a lot of talking. I was fascinated by a lot of what you guys were saying.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
And I cannot tell you how much I know Lee appreciate. Mm-hmm. The time that you guys took to sit down with us, educate our listeners.
I never expect this, and I always joke with Joe, like, you know, why does anyone listen?
Yeah.
But people keep listening, and we're growing.
They do, and I don't think I can express how much we appreciate it. We really, really
appreciate it. For
sure. More than welcome. Welcome to the idea of you guys coming back and
I was thinking the same thing.
There's a bunch of different questions that will flow from information here. So, you know, if you guys
something along those lines. Just people if they need you, they need help, right? McDermott Law Group,
Homewood, Illinois. You see MCD Wins, MCDWins.com, you see 833 MCD Wins. We've got Not Your Typical Attorneys is the easiest way. So if you can't remember anything else, just remember Not Your Typical Attorneys. If you go online, no matter what state you're in, no matter where you're from, if you look up Not Your Typical Attorneys.
It's such a shame that this is in video because they can't see these guys and they are not your typical attorneys.
But I'll tell you this. Don't be surprised one day if you come through the office and Leah and I are playing chess sitting right at the chair.
You're welcome to play chess whenever. You see people drop off. So for those of you who can't see, there's a bunch of bottles. These bottles, guys, there's a bunch of...
Yeah, tell us about that.
Bunch of very fun bottles all over this office. There's shelf. There's a ton of shelving, and there's a.
Oh yeah, it goes all the way to the door.
And this is the first floor. We own this building, but this is we have bottles downstairs as well. Upstairs are apartments we rent out. But all these bottles and some very difficult bottles to get your hands on, and some also very expensive bottles, and some just you know, everyday bottles. These are all bottles that were brought in by our clients.
Your clients.
So if you start looking at the bottles, if you look long enough, you see different names on there. We represent a lot of you know, we represent actors, you know, singers, very, very well-known business men and women, athletes. There's a lot of different people that drop off bottles that we've represented that drop off bottles. And as you can also see, guys, we consume these bottles. So
I did notice some of them.
The bottle graveyard is much more significant. There are very few empty bottles on these shelves. There are certain bottles just because of the memories of what we're dealing with. We keep some of those.
I see the Patron is like barely there.
But the crazy thing is we've got, when you talk about that, some of the bottles of tequila in this office are $300-$400 bottles of tequila. You know, we got some very, very difficult bourbons to get. I did a big thing for the USCCI. Spoke at one of their national conferences. Oh, well, I've spoken at a few, but I spoke at one of their national conferences, and they surprised me with a bottle of Pappy. So.
Oh, nice.
I've got some really fun bottles from some really great people to collect, you know, and at some point, unfortunately, discard. But we've got a lot of fun stuff in this office. A lot of this stuff is it's just client based, you know. It's organically grown to where it's at right now in the way that it's grown. So it's a lot of fun. But we appreciate having you guys here tonight. Really great conversation, even though we monopolized a good part of it.
We appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Great.